Assalamu alaikum and hello and welcome, dear viewers. This is Weekly Scope and you're watching us on Sahar TV. And I'm joined here by Dr. Franklin Lam, an international lawyer, a researcher. Hello and welcome to our program,
Thank
Dr.
You.
Franklin.
Happy to join.
As usual, dear viewers, we will take a look at the report and be right back. Starting with the Washington Post from the Middle East section with this headline, Egypt's military expands its control of the country's economy. According to the writer, in the shadows of a harsh political crackdown, the military that overthrew Egypt's first democratically elected president last summer is positioning itself to become the country's uncontested economic power. More from the Middle East section in the Washington Post. On third anniversary of Syrian rebellion, Assad is steadily winning the war. Israeli's killing of judge spurs anger in Jordan. The shooting death of a Jordanian judge by Israeli border guards this week has triggered an outpouring of anger in this kingdom, shaking ties between the two countries at a time when the United States is counting on Jordan's help in brokering a Middle East peace deal. The Washington Post highlighted from the World section, Turkish protesters mourn Birkin Elvan. From Africa, Tunisian police kill three militants in shootout. Tunisian counter-terrorism forces killed three armed militants early Monday after surrounding their home in a clash which lasted several hours, the state news agency reported. Moving on to Lebanon and from the Nahar Net, rising fears of more retaliation in Lebanon after fall of Yabrud. Fears rose in Lebanon on Monday that gunmen who have fled into Lebanon after Syrian government troops and Hezbollah fighters captured Yabrud, a strategic town near the frontier, would increase retaliatory attacks against the supporters of the Shi'ite party. The first alleged retaliation came on Sunday when a suicide bomber driving a Grand Cherokee left several casualties in the town of Nabi Othman, about 30 kilometers north of Baalbek. More from Nahar Net, army blows up booby-trapped vehicle on Ras Baalbek Road. The Lebanese army blew up on Monday a booby-trapped vehicle found on the Ras Baalbek road in eastern Lebanon. After rising a B-7 rocket on it, the military and the state-run national news agency reported. Moving on to Turkish Today's Zaman, long-simmering regional tensions emerge in search for a plane. The international hunt for the vanished Malaysia Airlines jet has been marked by mounting criticism about the pace of the investigation, whether information is being shared, and whether Malaysian officials are reaching out to enough experts. Today's Zaman highlighted thousands march in Moscow to protest Crimea vote. More on Crimea, NATO websites hit in cyber attack linked to Crimea tension. No let up in Venezuela's violent protest as death toll rises to 28. As peace hope withers, Palestinian president heads to Washington. Moving on to Pan Arab, Al-Sharq Al-Awsat newspaper from the World section with this headline, radar data suggests missing Malaysia plane deliberately flown way off course, sources. More from Al-Sharq Al-Awsat, Syrian forces fully control rebel stronghold near Lebanon. Syria said its military seized a key town that served as a rebel supply hub on the Lebanese border on Sunday after a month-long army offensive. Moving on to Middle East Online, car bomb targets hotel in central Mogadishu. A car bomb went off on Saturday in central Mogadishu near a hotel popular with government officials and businessmen, injuring at least one person, police and witnesses said. More from Middle East Online. Terrified south of Sudan civilians to be moved to new UN camps. Tens of thousands of South Sudanese civilians sheltering in UN peacekeeper bases, fearing revenge attacks after weeks of conflict, are to be moved to new camps, UN officials said Monday. Dr. Franklin, starting with Lebanese newspaper Daily Star, for writer Karim Shaheen, we picked up this article. He headlined Hezbollah's Yabrut triumph makes Lebanon bigger target. According to Karim Shaheen, Hezbollah's victory in the Syrian rebel stronghold of Yabrut is likely to increase security incidents and widen the sectarian divide in Lebanon, while boosting chances that the party's popular base will be targeted by more terror attacks, analysts and experts said, and according to the writer. How do you view that? I mean, to begin an article by speaking about the disadvantages of the fall of Yabrut, at times 8th of March, or even Hezbollah, or even the Syrian army believes that Yabrut is a strategic area and that they've done a good job over there and that they have joined Yabrut, gave it back to the Syrian government and kept it under its security. And the fall of Yabrut will maintain and provide more stability for Syria and Lebanon. How would you comment on the writer, what he said, compared to what others believe?
Well, quite right. There's no question that coming after Qusair, this is the second strategic, symbolic, and military victory. Mm-hmm. No question about it, whether or not you believe that the car bombs came from there. It certainly accelerates the control of the army, the Syrian army, throughout Syria. It gives them momentum. That's the big question. What's going to happen? Can Hezbollah and the army working together here stop the infiltrations?
Yes.
And they're going to come. Within hours, there was a dead Syrian with a message on his wall you saw, and there was a bomb and some rockets also. I think that's the big question. It's certainly a victory for the resistance, meaning Syria, Iran, Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad, and Hamas, mm-hmm. because it moves toward ridding Syria of this situation. But on the other hand, how much can Dahiya take? Families who want to send their kids to school, they're nervous. I think a big question for everyone now is exactly this point. What is going to be the effect? Is mm-hmm. it going to be bleak, or can they stop the infiltrations? We have yet to learn that, but mm-hmm. it seems the gentleman prejudged them, because it's obviously a big defeat for mm-hmm. those who support the revolution,
yes.
whether they're
and
in the Gulf or Washington,
even,
or everywhere.
He is even speaking of a sectarian division in Lebanon, because as a result of the fall of Yabrut, probably speaking of Ersal, and what we've seen lately coming from Ersal, which is at the borders with Yabrut. Ersal, of course, is a Lebanese territory. It's a Lebanese country. It's a Lebanese, of course, area over there. And they are blaming or according to the writer, the sectarian division can be seen because of these cars that are coming from Ersal to other neighboring Lebanese countries. And of course, we've seen how a lot of like Al-Hirmel area, when many bombs were fallen at Hirmel, they wanted to retaliate. They want to retaliate to Ersal, not to Syria.
Yes, exactly right. Well, if the Sunnis think that that was their last stronghold mm-hmm. and yet another defeat, I would imagine that those who seek to be the new Sunni leaders, al-Nusra, whoever, ISIS, they will attempt that to reassure the locals. You've seen all these messages about the Sunnis, don't worry, we're coming, we're going to protect you. I can imagine, even frankly, in certain neighborhoods around here, that the Sunnis are concerned about that. What have they got left?
Yabrut's fall has likely driven a significant number of rebels affiliated with radical groups such as al-Nusra Front into Lebanon, while failing to secure largely porous borders, they said. Is it true here? Of course, it is a common sense at one point that, of course, running away from Yabrut and entering into Lebanon.
Or going the north.
It's a strategy that is actually seen here, and it's believed.
It certainly would be a major destination, but there's a lot of areas up north where they might want to move. But the army, to its credit, is increasingly patrolling. Everyone says, well, those borders are so porous, you can't stop it. Probably you can't stop it, absolutely. But we're seeing more activity and more arrests and more interdictions by the army than we've seen in the past.
So they're working hard upon that.
I think so, and the Syrian government as well.
And of course, we've seen how neighboring areas are now calling for the Lebanese army to be inside Ersal, to enter Ersal, because they do believe that a lot of insurgents ran away from Yabrut and entered and are heading into in Ersal. How dangerous is that, Dr. Franklin, here, that tremendous number of insurgents are leaving Yabrut and entering into Ersal as a hidden area or as a safe haven to them, at least?
Well, and one question, related question, is the Lebanese army up to the job?
Yes.
I mean, a lot of these Salafist, jihadist, Takfiri types, they're very skilled fighters.
But they're not even allowed in yet for them to be capable. Yeah. I mean, they're not, Ersal people are not even allowing the army to get in.
Yes, I see. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the point. So, as you imply, that's another big problem in this period out there.
And how will that actually develop? We will see more car bombs inside Lebanon. We've seen there is...
That's the major question. Mm. Everybody from the shopkeeper, you know, to the taxi driver, we all ask that question. We just don't know to what extent the army checkpoints, and there's sort of 50 of them around, say, Dahya, and the Hezbollah security, can they stop them? Mm. Well, they've stopped them since 16 days, I guess it was. We just, that's the big question, because out of revenge, they've made it clear, al-Nusra, out of revenge and to liberate, we're going to target you in every neighborhood that your people are. Mm-hmm. Can they deliver?
Okay, so at times the Hezbollah probably believes that more security can be provided by the fall of Yabrut. We should be more concerned here, not the strategy.
I think that's probably true, that with the because it interdicts some of the supply routes both ways, and if you believe that these cars, a lot of them are rigged over there, sure, it will have that effect, I would think.
The writer said that Yabrut, or according to a visiting fellow at the Brookings Doha Center who has studied this insurgency in Syria extensively, he said that Yabrut represents Hezbollah's second major strategic and symbolic victory against opposition forces in Syria.
I agree, but others are saying that the situation in Lebanon in Syria is developing into the Afghanistan, the Iraq, the Vietnam of Hezbollah. But I think that's an overstatement. Those were much different in many ways, but challenges on both sides for sure, and we just don't know right now.
Can we predict that actually Syrian army is winning inside Syria with the fall of Yabrut? Is that prediction here? Do we have the right to say that? Because, of course, Yabrut is a strategic area to them, and once it's fallen, therefore, they can take the other areas easily. Would that give us the right to actually say that, yes, the Syrian army are winning and are achieving victories inside Syria?
Yeah, if we took a snapshot as of today, that's certainly the case. Mm. They have a string of victories. The big question is, what about the other side? You know, the Saudis and Qataris are splintering, but there's more and more jihadists. Again, you give a kid who hasn't got a job and who's thinking in this way, a pack of cigarettes, a free cigarettes, a Kalashnikov, $150 a month, you've got a militiaman. And the reports are in the south, as you know, that there are thousands and thousands forming. Mm-hmm. They're not going to go away, and the empire, you know, who they represent in the west, are going to keep funding them, and they're trying to figure this out. Right now, but the momentum today is clearly, I would say, with the army. but we don't know what happens next week.
Okay. Their lead role in Qusair effectively secured them target status inside Lebanon. And this victory in Yabi Abroad will undoubtedly consolidate that status. So, of course, as if giving them more credit by the fall of Yabrut.
Yes.
Syrian regime forces backed by fighters from Hezbollah Sunday entered the border town of Yabrut, a key battle in the fight to sever rebel supply lines from Lebanon. It is the second major victory in the area after forces loyal to embattled President Bashar Assad, according to the writer, also backed by Hezbollah, captured the key rebel-held town of Qusair. Now, with the shutdown of a strategic point for insurgents, transmission and the transmission of weapons and insurgents, as we highlighted, how will help be sent to these insurgents, and how will the countries funding these oppositions and these extremists be able to send all these weapons to them?
They have to, they'd have to use other borders, obviously,
yes,
from Jordan, Turkey, Iraq, and also the
from
border.
From your perspective, it would be easier now? It would be harder?
No, I think it's going to be more difficult to arm the so-called rebels, the opposition. Mm-hmm. But there are other paths into Lebanon besides that major one. And there's also a certain corruption, too. Mm. You can buy your way in, and some of these people are very experienced. So I don't think it's going to end it, but it obviously is a big plus for the Syrians and the resistance. And the test will be, to what extent can they seal that border and protect Dahia, for example?
To what extent are the Qataris and Saudis, or even at least the Turkish, the funders of the opposition inside Syria, or at least of the extremist groups, to what point will they still willing to send all these help to the insurgents?
Yeah.
Do they give up in your, or are they supposed to give up in your perspective because they are winning the war over there?
No,
there is
no point
of battling, or they are still enhancing?
Yeah, well, they're in a difficult position now. They're groping, I think, for a solution because there's plenty of problems in each of those countries. Yet the West is still willing to arm as they're doing and train as they're doing in Jordan. So it's too early to say it's a defeat. It seems to point to a continuation. I don't see either side being able to declare victory and win. What it looks like is it's going to go on. And there's plenty of funds. Again, as we said about the young people, the militia, you can fund those fellows forever, it would seem to me, because you've got money and there's plenty of that.
Okay. In addition, the victory in Yabrut is likely to fuel sectarian tensions in Lebanon, increasing the Sunni community's sense of injustice. Do you see that coming, Dr.
Fahey? I do. I see there's some of that. I think they're increasingly depressed. That they're not that they love the Takfiri Jihadists, but they want to topple that Alawi regime, and they feel this. I don't see it as being major, but it's one more blow to them, isn't it? Because the point of the matter is, March 14 does not have a leader, and the Sunnis do not have a leader. You know, the other sides do. But I think that's a problem in this period. I think they're concerned in Sunni areas. There's increased concern. Yeah.
Okay. Moving on to Tehran Times with the headline, Saudi Arabia and New Foreign Policy Challenges by Mahmoud Monisfori. The writer said that the removal of Prince Bandar bin Sultan, known as the organizer of New Army of Islam in Syria, to topple the Assad regime from the position of the Director General of Saudi Intelligence Agency is emblematic of a new power struggle in Saudi Arabia. The battle of succession continues in Saudi Arabia as a major socio-economic and political challenges loom large in a country whose leaders have yet to recover from the shocks of the 2011 Arab uprising across the Middle East and North Africa. How will these changes that occurred suddenly and out of nowhere in Saudi Arabia, moving on to the dispute between Qatar and Saudi Arabia within the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council, how will these challenges or dispute affect the Syrian case here?
Yes. Well, if we accept at face value that it's not a case of Bandar bin Sultan really being sick, as they've said, but there is this power struggle. There seems to be lots of evidence in there. That family, which, as you know, is inbred, they've been fighting, you know, for, and it seems to intensify. Surely, the reports coming out of Washington and other areas indicating that Saudi Arabia is in a very fragile state, and yes. there may be a revolt. And I think the regime, the family, we could say, is very concerned about that. This spat with Qatar and the GCC, I think that could be patched up because the Americans and the British and the French and their allies, they want that to stick together. They need Saudi Arabia. Mm. So I don't think it's fatal, but it's not looking good, especially with all else that's going on. I think they've got a real problem.
Okay, what explains this change of leadership, Bandar's influence on shaping Saudi foreign policy, has proven counterproductive, to say the least. In recent months, Bandar has spoken of forging an alliance with the nuclear-equipped Pakistan to counterbalance Iran's potential to grow as a nuclear power in the region. Most significantly, however, Bandar has been a driving force behind the formation of the Islamic Front Coalition in Syria. Changes of names, does it mean changes of foreign policies and foreign agendas, or changing of Bandar bin Sultan, whoever came after him? That does not mean that they will back off from Syria and they will change their own position over there.
Yeah, I think in this part of the world, it means more than it does in other areas. If you change the photo on the door or the nameplate or something like that. But in this case, I think that there's a real likelihood that there won't be a dramatic change. Okay. I think there'll be the
partial
family will
change.
Work it out, partial change, yes. Because they're getting enormous pressure from the West. They don't want this thing to collapse over there in the Gulf. They want to preserve it with all that's going on, the pressure.
So the change of Bandar bin Sultan was upon a request made by Western societies, by the U.S. specifically?
Could be. I'm not aware of that.
What will actually push Saudi Arabia
to take
that path?
You know, he was 25 years in America. He was a golden boy. I met him. He'd come to Palestinian events. He was very, he was on. You know, he was the Bush administration's man. Both Bushes. I don't think he was pushed out. I think he's either ill or there's internal fighting, and apparently it has been intense between the older and the younger siblings, all of the children and grandchildren of five.
In politics, we're not allowed to say, just move away the fact that he can be ill. We always know that there is something going on behind the table. What will Saudi Arabia gain from this, Doctor? Will they maintain security within Saudi Arabia by changing Bandar bin Sultan? Or will they have some kind of this kind of security, let me say, from other sites that are blaming them and pointing to them that they are funding Al-Qaeda majorly?
That could well be. And I think it's also related to the attitude of Bandar in all this. He's enormously powerful in that family regime, that kingdom. And we don't know exactly what his position is. There's certainly the potential. But I think they are so conservative and so cautious and so afraid that there's going to be women's rights and a real change, that I think they're going to go slowly, slowly, and not try to do anything very dramatic, but use their internal security. You've seen some of the recent actions. They're jailing people on Twitter.
Yes.
For setting, and of course the women's rights are starting, but every time they seem to get going, they get squelched. So things are happening, but I don't see it immediately. I think the focus is going to be on Lebanon, Syria for this period. And it's not that they're irrelevant out there, but they're certainly on the sideline, I think.
Dr. Franklin Lampen, international lawyer, thank you very much for joining
us.
Dear viewers, that's all the time that we have. Thank you for watching.